Welcome to the November 6, 2018 Black Diamond Planning Commission meeting. If you would rise for the flag salute, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Thank you, commissioners. Clerk Kathy, may we have the roll call, please?
Yes. Commissioner LeConte? Commissioner Jensen?
Present.
Commissioner Ekberg?
Here.
Commissioner McCain?
Here.
Commissioner Butt?
Here.
Commissioner Amber? Commissioner Olson?
Present.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. We do have a quorum, so we will continue with tonight's agenda. If anyone would like to address the Planning Commission, now would be your time. Please step to the podium. The microphone is on, and state your name and city for the record.
We're all looking at you.
All right, Mr. Davis. Yeah.
Unappreciated.
Oh, thank you.
He's a trooper, ex-commissioner.
Okay. Good evening, Madam Chairman, members of the Planning Commission, and special recognition for our new members, Mr. Jensen, Mr. Butt. I'm Gary Davis of Black Diamond. Used to be on the Planning Commission. Now I'm just a general irritant. But it'd be nice to see that you're getting off of the infamous, dreaded comprehensive plan and can get on to other topics. Thank you very much. Good evening.
Well, thank you for your comments, Mr. Davis. With all that being said, we'll look to approve the minutes from August 14, 2018, as well as the regular meeting minutes of the September 11, 2018 meeting. We'll take them one by one. So, commissioners, if you've had a chance to approve the regular meeting minutes of August 14, 2018.
Commissioner Olson, I have, and I believe we just need to make an edit under the approval of minutes, regular meeting of July 10th, 2018, I believe that it was 4-1.
So, okay. So, good catch, Commissioner Olson. What is the process at this point in time, Kathy?
I'm going to have to go back and plug into the minutes and listen.
I just based it on who was present at the meeting. How many people? I didn't print it. I didn't have time to print it. I just went back and I looked at how many of us were there. And I think when we made the original motion, the original motion did contain the 5-1, but it was misspoken.
Okay. So
there's only five people there.
Did you include her as well for your vote?
Commissioners plus myself as chairman.
So well, is she listed in the on the minutes in the yes? Is she
so we have
present? I counted everyone under the present call.
And there were total five people.
Total of five people,
including
everyone
our
on that line. If it's as
and
if
so,
it
then
is
the
today,
vote couldn't be 5-1.
Couldn't be 5-1
because there were only five people.
Okay.
So
the vote currently says 4-1.
The vote currently says 5-1.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, so we're on that item number 4, approval of the minutes, second line. So we'll let the clerk get that figured out, and we will represent those meetings at our next those minutes at our next meeting for approval. Oh, thank you, Commissioner Olson. All right, so moving on with the regular meeting minutes of September 11, 2018. Has everyone had a chance to review those?
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion to approve the meeting minutes for September 11, 2018.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson. Is there a second to that?
I second.
Okay, thank you. There's been a motion and a second to approve the minutes of the 2018 September 11 minutes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion's carried. Thank you, commissioners. So now, Ms. Kincaid, we're going to point to you for our new business.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. And good evening, planning commissioners. We want to welcome our two new members, Weston Butt and Steve Jensen. We're very happy that you're joining the commission. I don't know if I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but if you wanted to say anything as an introduction, feel free.
I'm okay at this time.
I welcome the opportunity for this experience. I'm looking forward to it.
Great. So that's on new business, and I think we're probably ready to go into item B, which is the meat of our meeting tonight, which is a review of Chapter 1850 in the Black Diamond Municipal Code. The chapter title is Accessory Uses and Structures. And I just kind of want to preface, we, as our public commenter talked about, we've been on the city's comprehensive plan update for quite a while. It's a, 200-page document that's very dry, and it's all about setting the policies for the language that we use to in our code, which implements these policies. So now we get to actually start on the code work, and I think that it's going to be, a lot of fun. The Black Diamond Code has got a lot of inconsistencies and things that are outdated and just stuff that we really need to dig into chapter by chapter and address. So I thought that the first one we do would be this 1850, because it's one of the things that has been reoccurring as a problem in the planning permitting section of the city. And I, in your packet, have given you just a little memo that just will probably work through this memo, and attached to that memo is the existing 1850 code language. I've annotated a little bit just to where it makes reference to another section of code, just so you kind of have that context. But the process for doing this code work would be we'd sit down like we're doing and just sort of have a discussion about what is missing or what maybe need to be corrected from the staff perspective, with some recommendations from me or ideas, and we talk that through and get a consensus on how this code should read or should be amended. And then we would bring the actual amended code back to you with the strike through and the underline based on our discussion, and you would review that, and you'd hold a public hearing to take public comment. After the public hearing is closed, then just like you did with the comp plan, you kind of look at, are there things that we want to revise, or are we okay with it the way that, in the form that it went to hearing? And you make that decision in a deliberation, and then you send it off with your recommendation to the city council, and the city council would actually be passing the ordinance to revise this code section. So that's kind of how the process goes. So just launching right into the accessory use and structure is, I didn't want to give a lot of explanation, because I figure that for the most part you sort of know what that is pertaining to. An accessory use is something that is incidental to a primary use. So it could be if you have a residential house, that's the primary use, and your accessory uses or structures are going to be like a garage or, you know, so that's just, or in the commercial, it may be some storage area. That's going to be the accessory use to the primary use of the commercial building. As a rule of thumb, an accessory use or an accessory structure should never be larger or more important than the primary use, which is logical. And that's just kind of the way we start thinking about this. In our code section, I kind of started to number out some of the things that I would like to discuss that I think are creating some problems and could be written better. The whole idea is to make it so that, number one, people that need to get a permit and they're reading through, can I get this permit or what does this mean, I actually understand. So we try to stay away from language that's ambiguous or unclear and people are thinking, I have no idea if this pertains to me and what do I want to do or not. So we want to try to clean that language up. And then the other thing is how restrictive do we want to be? You know, so you kind of think about that as a scale of, depending on what we're discussing, there may be things that we want to be pretty restrictive and some things where we want to be more flexible, and it's up to really the commission to talk that through with staff and get input from the public that's interested to come to that consensus overall. And then the other thing is that we talked a lot about what's community character, what's the rural character in our comp plan, and we struggled with that because it kind of means something different to a lot of people, but where the rubber hits the road is in these codes. So that's where you really, in the built environment, what you're allowing, whether it's extremely regulated or it's more flexible, is going to result in that character that we all talked about, if that makes sense to you.
And I'd like to just make a comment. Mm-hmm. In my professional experience with my real estate business, accessory dwelling units are becoming incredibly popular in lots of places. The city of Tukwila has a very aggressive ADU code. I think they recognize that the population's aging, that a lot of times a good alternative for kids is to have parents move much closer to them and for their care and attention, and I think that's a good idea. Just recently got in the city of Enumclaw approved a reverse ADU, so that the small house that's existing became the ADU unit, and they let them build the major house. So it was kind of a reverse criteria.
Interesting.
So they're interested in building up their infill and getting some more tax revenue and accomplishing their affordable housing quotas too. So mm-hmm. I think it's really a subject that's been talked about a lot around us. Also, Barb, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, that we have a provision for ADUs in the MPD.
We do, yes, and I do want to say that the section of code that I've given you tonight, it's just the accessory uses and structures. The accessory dwelling units is actually in a different section of code, but that would be on the heels. I didn't want to bring you much at once because obviously they're related, because an accessory dwelling unit is a special kind of an accessory use.
All right, so that's not being considered as part of the discussion in this chapter.
It folds right into it, but not in this chapter.
Okay.
But when we talk about the height limits, the two play together. But that would be the next chapter of code that we could talk about. But I thought we'd start at this and then talk about the special kind of accessory structure, which is an accessory dwelling unit.
Oh, interesting. Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah.
Point of information.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Olson. When we go over these, like decks and like you said, garages, Are there any codes or regulations currently that categorize those as when they're not attached to the house?
So, yes, that's a great question. So accessory structures can be attached or detached. And typically you want to clarify if a section of your code is only regulating a detached structure. So let's just say when we get into this kind of this height restriction thing, you may have, that wouldn't maybe apply to an attached garage. So you have to kind of keep that. Are we talking attached or detached? Do we want to differentiate between them in the code language?
Because and I don't want to jump too far ahead, but I'll just pick decks because that's what stood out, right? Mm-hmm. So right now I could build a deck and there'd be no permits, there'd be nothing involved, or I wouldn't have to come to the city. Is that right?
It depends on the size of the deck and the height of the deck.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there are other areas that speak to this that we don't...
That's right, yes. Okay. So there are always other codes, so the whole code suite works together when we're talking about a deck or you've got your building code, which is where you're going to have to get a permit under the building code for a deck if it's over a certain size or height. So then you have your environmental codes. So there's a lot of different code sections that all interplay, which is why you'll almost always see a discussion in code about relationship to the other codes or some language that says, notwithstanding this, all of these other things also apply. Yeah. So if you look at the code sheet where I've highlighted this is just kind of a housekeeping thing that, you know, under the intent in 010, the language says customarily subordinate. And I did a lot of research about this because custom, I don't know about you, but when you're trying to figure out whether somebody's proposal is customary or not, it's a little tricky. So some of the research that I did really suggested that word customarily should just be eliminated, because really it just makes it more ambiguous. And if you just talk about that the activities and structures are subordinate and incidental to the principal use, then you know that's pretty clear without adding that one word that starts to confuse people. So that's just one number one recommendation that I would have, is to strike that word. Then the second
should we go over these one by one just so we kind of get them out of the way in terms of whether we agree or disagree?
I think that'd be nice if you guys have an opinion and just say, yeah, I agree with
so
you.
So I agree
or,
with that one.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree to eliminate that word.
Sorry, Commissioner Olson, point of information.
So I kind of got a consensus that's okay.
Right.
And so then number two that I'm talking about in 020 in the general provisions, the language here about being complementary to the basic architectural character, it also gives me some trouble, and when I did some research about a better way to say that, some of the language that came up was visually compatible rather than complementary. Because complementary is, again, sort of vague to me, but if you say visually compatible, I think that means more, and just weigh in if you think that I'm splitting hairs, but
I think they're both pretty subjective, so
yeah.
I don't know if it's necessary, but we can change it. It doesn't, I don't think either way it matters to me, it's still a subjective decision.
Mm-hmm. Complimentary, it seems like it's an could be opinion, mm-hmm. right? So does
visually compatible.
So maybe speaking to in the same design or in the same art, you know, I'm trying to struggle to find a word also, but mm-hmm.
yeah.
in the same likeness of the original structure, you know, because I think what it's speaking about is keeping in line with whatever building is there to look similar, right? Kind of like when you go to Leavenworth, everything looks German.
Yeah.
And you can't just have a McDonald's in the middle of the... Maybe we should check their code out there, see what they say.
Yeah, that's true. They probably have some pretty good... So, yeah, it's interesting. You think that they're both pretty subjective and that if you were reading it, you wouldn't have... One wouldn't be clearer to you. I mean, it's all in the interpreter and the reader sometimes, so...
I don't think there's any way for that... particular subject or whatever to not be open to some interpretation. I mean, there's no way to make that, to say it so it's black and white, because it never will be black and white.
Right.
No, and it's a general vision. So you're talking about not only a guy put a shop in his backyard that everybody's going to see, but you're talking about an industrial park where a guy's got a storage shed outside of a 100,000 square foot warehouse. I mean, mm-hmm. It's very broad when it's a general provision on all the different commercial, industrial zones, residential zones.
Yeah.
So maybe
that's true. That's very true.
Yeah. I mean,
it
needs to be kind of subjective.
Commissioner McCain, even the word generally compatible is still filled with a lot of points of discussion. Mm-hmm. So...
Maybe there is no better way, you think?
Going to be on a case-by-case anyways, it seems like.
Yeah.
Commissioner Eckberg, I think visually compatible is more specific.
I felt like it was, but...
If you look at a deck, you're wanting to add a deck, is that visually compatible with the house? Chances are that you'd want that to be the case.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't want to have a, you know... mirrors and you wouldn't want to have strange things on the deck that would not be visually compatible. So I think you could make a case where if it's visually compatible, then it's okay. Then you can look at the main structure, look at the plan for the addition or accessory, and see if they fit.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner McCain, I know that in the close proximity to my own house, we'll have a home on the lake that was built probably late 60s, and their accessory dwelling will be a metal pole building.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's a bit of a conflict when you're in a residential neighborhood and this building that's more industrial than residential shows up. But in my opinion, I think that the visually compatible set of adjectives would work better.
I think we could add what we mean by that same, and in other codes they went to that degree of saying, explaining what they meant, that it would be, you know, the exterior materials would be of like kind, the trim, we could kind of put some things in there as that would be a more definitive about what we mean. But then I guess you bring an interesting point up. I mean, how is it important to this community to have outbuildings, accessory buildings that are compatible and, you know, match the primary residences and in commercials too, you know? Is that something that's important in terms of the aesthetic of the city and the kind of the continuity of having things, you know, look like they fit together? That's a very much, there's no science behind that. That's just how this community wants to look. So that's a bigger question. Mm-hmm. I mean, we just assume that we want the houses and the garages to match, but that's, you know, anybody have a thought on that.
Well, Commissioner Olson, we have a lot of different income ranges in the city too, right? And so some people may have more means to dress up their shed a little better to match their home. And maybe others might just go to the Home Depot and get those units, those prefab units that are already built. And so you wouldn't want to stop somebody from doing that. They do own the land, and to say that they cannot do whatever or within reason what they want on their land for a shed or something like this would be a little excessive, in my opinion.
Yeah. And it does say in this general provision, the last sentence is that they're subject to the design guidelines that we have adopted. So maybe that's good enough.
Commissioner Jensen, it seems to me that maybe the phrase visually compatible might be a little bit, while it's still not concrete, but it might be a little easier to work with. Someone mentioned Leavenworth. I think if we were Leavenworth, it really is important that it is a certain architectural type that you stay in that continuity and that you don't build something I can't think of what it might be, but something that's just totally not Leavenworth in Leavenworth, because that's going to stick out like a sore thumb.
Mm-hmm.
My vision of Black Diamond is a little more eclectic than Leavenworth, and so I don't think it would be possible for us to define this is our official architectural design. But I think visually compatible would give some teeth to not allow someone to build something strange.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that again, even if our community is eclectic, there are some things that people could build on their property that would be beyond eclectic.
Yeah. True.
Commissioner McCain, one thing for just information for our new commissioners is we do have some design standards that have been passed and approved as part of our recent comp plan that, they were challenging to try to find the right term and phraseology for that, but we do have new design standards in place. So I think updating this code to be similar to that is a good idea, but it's not the first time that we've discussed this design standard here on the Planning Commission. So.
Well, I think I'm hearing, though, that everyone's pretty comfortable with visually compatible, that may be better, it may not be any change at all. But so, with your approval, I think I'll just change that wording when we bring the code back.
All right. Just commissioners, do you more or less agree that change, that verbiage change is adequate?
I disagree, but I'm the minority. So.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. All right.
So then we get into the, basically the dimensional standards that are, and right into the one that is the problem child for the planning department and the permitting department. And that's C, the maximum accessory structure height. So the height that we have in the residential zone is 26 feet or the height of the principal structure, whichever is less. So what this language does, in effect, and it carries over to the accessory dwelling unit chapter, is if somebody has a two-story house, they get to build a 26-foot structure as their accessory structure. If they have a single-story house, they can't. So it really disadvantages and treats people differently based on whether they have a one-story or two-story house. We've had many people that have come in and they've been trying to figure out how they can put a accessory dwelling unit on the second story of a structure with parking down below, but they have a rambler. They can't do it. And so the big question here is that something that that we think is equitable to everybody, And there are different ways, really, to look at the height problem of, you know, there are some places that say, sorry, no matter what, you can only have a single-story accessory, you know, that's the way it is. So the height restriction can go from 14 up to 24, generally, for an accessory. And in our case, I really wondered if we might want to consider being able to have this language, if you look at the third bullet on the second page of my memo, where it's more about, it's less about the height limitation, and it's more about looking at the compatibility with the surrounding area. So so I put some, just threw some language that compatibility with the surrounding structure, assure that the accessory structure is architecturally and aesthetically in harmony, and that it shall be similar in height to the five nearest accessory structures. To see what you thought about approaching it that way. So, but it does say that the exception is that if you want to build a garage to accommodate a motor vehicle, it can exceed 14 feet. Then you don't have to do this, you know, checking with the five compatible. In my mind, this may be a good way to make sure that if you live in an area where, you know, people are building two-story, you've got a lot of two-story houses, and I think of Lake Sawyer here because you've got a lot of people around that lake that are building these big two-story houses, and, of course, they're building two-story accessory structures. But then you still have this mix of folks that still have the ramblers.
Or and daylight they're, basements.
Yeah, and they're coming in and they're... And so I just kind of throw this language out to see. I mean, there's different approaches. We can leave it the way it is, but I think that it's not particularly fair to everybody. And so I'd like to talk about how we might fix that problem. And so this is one suggestion, or we could just, you know, make the accessory structures all one height. Like we could say they all have to be 20 or 24. Or no more than, which in some cases is going to be taller than the single story home, but it won't exceed, you know, the 26 foot or 32 foot maximum allowable height for a residential structure. So, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, do you think that this bullet would work the way that I proposed it?
So, Commissioner Olson, a real life example, like there's a house they want to get they're a rambler. They want to build a two-story something in the back.
Right.
What would need to be around them? What are those five things that need to be around them that would make this?
They would have to be able to be in a neighborhood where there were five nearby two-story accessory buildings.
So...
Because otherwise theirs would be sticking out and it would be the only one, and, you know.
Yeah. So if there's a mixed neighborhood of ramblers and duplexes, even though there are duplexes, those duplexes would have to have accessory buildings tall enough to let that person build, and not simply, but they have a duplex.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm using the wrong word.
Two-story.
I'm sorry. I'm using the word two-story.
Okay.
That just wouldn't work. And so my thought is maybe change that to not accessory, but main dwellings. Does that make sense?
I don't.
Okay, so I have a rambler, and there's five two-story homes around me.
Okay.
They're the only ones who can build a two-story dwelling, right?
Oh, okay.
Accessory dwelling.
Yeah.
Accessory dwelling. And so I would need to talk them into building them before I could build it.
Okay, so you're saying the five nearest structures instead of accessory. That makes good sense.
Yes, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
So you just strike accessories on that line,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. So as you're thinking about it, I mean, how do you think, I mean, this, if you...
I agree.
Okay.
Commissioner, but I think I would lean more towards just removing the whichever is less and give everyone an equal...
26.
26, because, you know, you have a rambler with 8-foot walls and a low pitch, you might be 10 feet tall, and you might want to put a shop with a 10-foot door and have an 8-12 pitch, and you're at 16 feet, well, you know, you can't, but then the guy next door has a 2-story house, and he can go up to 26 feet.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems really restrictive. Mm-hmm. Now, the one comment you have about cottage housing, that they can only go 18 feet high, it would make sense in, like, that zoning to only allow accessory
right.
units to that height.
Right. That is one point I was going to bring up. I mean, we can think about these height restrictions in the zones they're in. Like in the residential zones that we have residential 4 and residential 6. And in that those zones, the maximum height that the house can be is 32 feet. The cottage housing is its own kind of strange chapter that we'll be working on, but yeah. Mm-hmm. But so I mean, the point is that we have different areas where we could apply different height. I mean, and that might make sense.
Yeah. Well, it's yeah. like the only zone that has that is cottage housing.
Yeah.
There's not.
Yeah.
Everywhere else, it's all the same.
So if everyone had, so basically we have this kind of these two ideas that we could say, like everyone should be able to, regardless of the size of their primary dwelling, should be able to build a structure up to 26. We're not stuck with 26. We can lower that if we wanted to. Or we go with this idea that, you know, if they can show that they've got 5 neighbors or, you know, in their neighborhood that are a certain height, then they can do it too. Those are kind of the two ways to approach it.
Commissioner McCain, I disagree with the 5 nearest accessory structures part,
mm-hmm.
Only because it really imparts lots of pressure on the first guy. You know, there's somebody has to be first. So
yeah,
I think that I would be a proponent of striking that similar in height to the 5 nearest accessory structures from this code revision change. That would be my opinion.
And go with a, Commissioner Butts has said, the same height. Everyone can build an accessory structure up to 26 feet.
Sure.
Well, or it could be 20 or 24. I mean, that's up to us to think about.
And Commissioner Bett brought up a good point. The RVs, you know, a lot of RVs that people find really popular now, how tall are they? Do you have what sort of opening do you need?
I mean, most people are probably going to put a 14-foot door, and then you got above that, you're going to be 16 or 18 feet, and depending on your pitch on your roof, you're going to be up in the 20-plus foot range pretty fast.
Oh, okay.
Just for an
especially
RV.
Especially if you have multiple, you know, yeah. have like two, you know, 2 doors or 2 bays.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, getting up over 20 feet just to have a motorhome is going to be pretty easy.
Yeah, that's good to know.
And Commissioner McCain, I think that we reduced our impervious surface from 80 to 70%, I believe, at the comp plan. Am I correct, Barb? I thought we changed our impervious surface calculation.
Not in the comp plan. No, maybe in the stormwater.
You know, I bet we did with the waterfront plan that we did, perhaps.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The shoreline plan,
yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah,
but anyway,
that's right.
It is going to be more restrictive just by, you know, having to meet the impervious surface quotient along with the structure height, and I think that we could make a good argument for it not being equitable for everybody. So mm-hmm. I would be a proponent of the 26 feet, no higher than that, whether they have a rambler or not.
So,
any other discussion? Tom? Commissioner Eckbert?
That makes sense.
Yeah. Okay.
So Commissioner Olson, are we it's currently taller than that, right? So we were talking about lowering some of.
Well, you know, so if we look back at this code section where it's highlighted, and the current language reads maximum in C, maximum accessory structure height, 1 residential zones, 26 feet, or the height of the principal structure, whichever is less. The suggestion is we strike whichever is less, but 26 feet or the height of the principal structure. I mean,
just 26
mm-hmm. feet. No more than 26 feet is kind of what we're talking about. Or we have the option if we think 26 feet is kind of tall as a blanket. I mean, and we could make it less. Like I said, the range. Portland just did 20 blanket 20 feet. That's Portland. Somewhere else I read had 24. So it's all kind of all over the board in terms of what's the right height, you know.
Do you know how tall a two-story home generally is?
I was just going to ask the same question.
It's about, a two-story is about 24 feet.
Okay.
Oh, the average two-story home
is about 24
feet. Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Includes the roof?
I don't think it includes the pitch. No, I think it's up the stem.
So 26 doesn't include the pitch?
Oh, the 24-foot for a two-story house is usually the walls. It doesn't include what they're, yeah. So the question was what's this kind of a standard two-story mm-hmm. house height that's 24?
So then how are we going to compute, how are we going to do this 26 feet? Is it going to include the roof or not?
Well, for the measurement?
For the accessory, though.
Well, we'll have to make sure that that is including, we'll have to make sure that that's clarified, that that's up to the measured, yeah. Which, good point, because it doesn't tell us. It doesn't tell us.
Structure height, I assume that would include the roof.
Yeah.
That's part of the structure.
Well, that just seems logical.
Yeah.
I wouldn't cut the roof off and measure it to there and say that's how tall it is.
Yeah.
Because visually, it's to the top of the roof.
So if a two-story house, average two-story home is 20, you're going to know better than I am, is 24 feet, maybe we want our accessory.
Well, you can build a house up to 32 right now.
That's true.
So, I mean,
yeah.
In that zone, in a residential zone, you can go up to 32, so I don't think 26
would be
crazy.
Are we comfortable with leaving the 26 and just saying that that's the height that the accessory structure can be, regardless in the residential zone, regardless of whether there's, you know, the height of the principal or primary structure?
I'm okay with that.
I'm good with that.
But how do we need to specify how we measure that?
We can put that in. Yeah, that it's from the
exterior walls.
Top of the highest point, highest point of the structure. Yeah. Yeah.
And Commissioner Olson, so if somebody built a two-story accessory unit with their Rambler, would that couldn't be considered visually
compatible? That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? No, probably not. I mean, in terms of my, you know, my architectural, urban design background, probably I would say no.
So I think it protects everyone in this case, then. If you have a lot full of Ramblers, this kind of prevents that, you know.
Yeah.
And so is that what we want?
Yeah, that's the question. Mm-hmm.
Commissioner
so
McKay.
What you're saying is one checks the other.
What's that?
You're saying that one checks the other. When we said it has to be, we just talked about it being visually compatible, and now we've moved to 26 feet, so we can still go 26 feet's okay, but it's not visually compatible, so it's not okay.
No, what we're saying basically is that I think maybe what the intent was is that if you had a neighborhood full of Ramblers, they could not build a two-story accessory unit because it wouldn't be visually compatible.
Right.
But if you did have a mixed lot area, then you could probably do it because it could be argued that it is visually compatible with the area.
So by having this one size blanket, then we need to get rid of the visually compatible language, I think.
Well, what I'm saying that if we keep visually compatible, we are saying that I think it works well is what I'm trying to say, right? Because you're basically saying that if you live in a neighborhood full of ramblers, right, and you want to build a two-story accessory unit, you couldn't if it says visually compatible. If it didn't say visually compatible, you could. So the question that we, I guess, we need to talk about is what is the intent? Is the intent to let that happen or to make it possible or not?
Exactly. Because these two would conflict.
Yes. And Commissioner McCain, and who would decide then?
I know, again,
on the west side of the lake where I live, someone just built a impressive two-story home, and within 15 feet, impressive same height accessory dwelling. That looks a little strange. Looks sort of like hotel buildings.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So I would consider that visually incompatible, but I think we have to take a little bit more of the bias out of our regulations. So there's many different ways to look at this.
Yeah, Commissioner, so I don't know if they conflict, right? If we leave them as it is, they don't conflict. They just convey a different message, right?
I believe they conflict.
You don't think they could both be there?
I personally don't. I don't know. Do we have any other?
I would say this. Stuff like this is very common in the city code, and mm-hmm. It would be really rare for someone to get denied for visually compatible, unless it was something really out there that was going to disturb the neighbors almost.
Or they have really defined it. If your house has got wood siding, your structure better have wood siding, that kind of thing.
I think this is pretty general, and it just is a small protection against something really out there that the city could. I doubt it will ever come up, but the city would have it just in case there was an issue they didn't want something done.
So, but we are okay with 26 foot height for residential zones as a.
Does everybody feel? Commissioner Jensen?
I'm not as familiar with just visualizing what 22 or 24 or 26 looks like. I'm gathering that you must be in construction.
Yeah.
So if we said 24, is that making any difference of that bigger structure fitting into this neighborhood that's all ramblers, or are we just
at 24? It's still because a normal rambler, it's probably only going to be, especially if it's an older neighborhood, it's probably only going to be 12 to 14 feet tall at the top. You know, maybe 10 or 11 because the walls are probably 8 feet. So, I mean, 24 or 26 are going to stand out just the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean that's it's quite a ways up there and. We don't have a lot of, we have a couple small neighborhoods, but there isn't that many where it's all, I don't think we have a neighborhood that's all really ramblers anywhere.
That's true. They're
the
mixed.
City. And then the whole
true.
MPD stuff,
mm-hmm.
every house is a two-story to begin with, mm-hmm. and they don't have enough room to add a accessory dwelling unit anyways.
Mm-hmm.
This is pretty much just to the existing homes that are in the city right now and the ones that have space.
Yeah, that's true. Good point, though. So probably 26 is going to be fine, I mean, versus 24.
We just had one come through that wanted to go higher than that.
28.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that variance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there will be a variance section here, so... So if we set the maximum height just that's outright a little lower, we can still have a provision for the variance to allow them to go higher under certain criteria, and I think that's a safe way to do it. So.
Generally speaking, is everybody okay with that consensus? 24 feet. What was it, 24 feet, 26 feet, that would more or less, that gives appropriate head height to the second story, you know, you couldn't put a monster, build a monster garage, but without a variance, and that's how they would handle that for
right.
for most real eclectic uses. So
right.
26 feet, we're all okay with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, that should cover okay. pretty much anything.
And so then the other zones, the neighborhood commercial and business park and industrial, you can see that they have the neighborhood commercial, community business, town center is just a blanket 26, which actually I think that works really well now that we've done the residential 26 because we're really trying to move towards more mixed use community with residential and commercial. So I think that may work really well. The 35 feet, and here's one on the business where they have this same language on three for business or industrial park in industrial zones, that it's a 35 feet or the height of the principal use structure, whichever is less. That I'm not sure that that is even necessary to have that language there. Just say 35 feet and in mm-hmm. in a business industrial business park and industrial zones, if the commission agrees.
I don't have a problem.
Yeah, I agree. You can
yeah.
Okay. So, and so before we move on to the uses, more about the dimensional standards. So one thing that's going to be great that checks us with the height is by limiting the footprint of all. So I'm on the first page, the bottom of the page, the first bullet. I would recommend, though, we make sure that we have some language that the combination of all of the accessory buildings on a lot can't exceed 75% of the primary structure. And also then, of course, the lot structure and the accessory buildings can't exceed the maximum lot coverage of the zoning district. Those are two parameters that keep the scale in check, even though they were saying, okay, a taller building is going to be okay, but we're not going to allow you to build a megaplex to your on your property with your house. And you can't exceed, of course, the maximum lot coverage that's in place. Are you?
So 75%.
But Commissioner Olson, and does this apply to everything like tennis courts?
This would apply to everything.
So if you have a large land, small house, no tennis court, if in this scenario. I don't know mm-hmm. anyone who wanted to build a tennis court anyway. I'm just using
No,
them.
That's true. But this in this scenario, if you have a if you have like a little house,
yeah,
you're going to be limited to how many.
But that wouldn't be an accessory building. Wouldn't be an accessory building.
Yeah, that's true. This just says buildings. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So building.
Yeah, that's
building.
True.
Okay.
This
but
would
yeah,
say,
if you have a small house, you can't put a big shop.
Basically, well, that's what we're saying, though.
Yeah,
and
that's
so,
bigger than your house.
Yeah.
75% of the house.
Yeah, right.
And that's to try to keep the scale so that you know that the primary structure is still the primary structure.
Does it seem, Mr. Olson, that your land should be involved with this also? I mean, if you have a large lot of land and you have a small house and you want to build a big shed, it seems almost that just it should, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so maybe what we have is bookends here where we could say 75% or a percent of the overall area. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because there are
yeah.
still some, like the airplane hangar.
Yep.
You know, obviously the accessory dwelling unit's much larger than its house.
Yep. So, yeah, I agree. We need to say the 75% of the gross floor area of the primary structure or I don't know what that number would be of the overall land area.
Yeah, that would be a tough one.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe something along the lines of lots over 1 acre are exempt or or I don't know what the size would be necessary.
Oh, we could just say the 75% doesn't apply to lots over a certain...
Over 1 acre of land.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a 1,200-foot house and you have 2 acres, you should be able to do a 2,000-foot shop.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I agree.
You've got a ton of lot area.
That's a simple way to handle it.
Right.
Lots over...
probably 1 acre, because that's pretty substantial size.
What acres?
43,000 feet.
You could probably get it on a half acre.
Hmm. Yeah, you probably could.
You could get it on a half acre.
I think, yeah.
1 acre's a pretty
I think 1 acre.
Yeah, there's not a lot of those around.
Right.
In the city.
True. Let's say let's stick with 1 acre. Would not apply.
Yeah.
Okay.
And again, if there's a weird case, I mean, there can always be a variance.
Right. Good. So now on to the second page where we talk about the uses. It's a laundry list of the types of uses that that I felt like was a little incomplete. For example, it didn't talk about decks or greenhouses. So the uses are listed on page 2 of the code in 1850.030. When we're on residential here, just talking about the residential in A, you can see the 8 things that they've listed. We don't have decks, and we don't have greenhouses. And it would be nice to have those as, you know, part of the list here in 6.
Would the cultivation of flowers, trees, and produce, wouldn't that kind of mean greenhouses?
It doesn't really, though. I mean, it...
But why would you have an accessory
yeah.
use to do that if it's not in a greenhouse? I mean, if you're doing it outside just in your lawn, you wouldn't need a permit.
It's got to do with buildings.
No, but remember, the use doesn't have anything to do with buildings.
Yeah, uses and structures.
Yeah, this is uses and structures, which I think you're right. I mean, it's number one, the way that it's written is just sort of silly. If they wanted to say greenhouses, they should have said greenhouses.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that needs clarification.
Yeah. Because, of course, everybody can grow flowers and trees in their yard as a use, but... But this language doesn't make that clear, does it?
That's why it's time for an update.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I think we want to add a separate line for workshops. Workshops is sort of folded in to
6
there, but I think we ought to pull it out and add studio and make sure that we say that they're going to be non-commercial, used by the occupants, and they are subject to the city's noise ordinance. So that a person could have, you know, get approved for a permit to build a workshop or a studio for their own use, and that we can make sure and regulate that they're not going to be using it for commercial, or they're not going to be, you know, bothering their neighbors all night with the table saw. Yeah. Does that sound reasonable to you?
So we're talking about adding one that says greenhouses are okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be here. Here's your suggestions.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I think that the decks and greenhouses would be a good replacement to item number 1
mm-hmm.
in that 1850.03 code.
Mm-hmm.
So number 2, separate line for workshops and studios. Subject to regular city ordinances, which is with noise, traffic.
Yep.
So that's a good point.
Why would we state non-commercial, Commissioner Olson?
Pardon me?
Why would we put in non-commercial?
Oh, because you wouldn't want in a residential area for someone just to be able to build a shop that's going to be a commercial without going through the home occupation permitting tract. Because if they just build a structure that they're going to use for commercial, we have to have some more regulations to make sure that it doesn't disrupt or impact the neighborhood.
Yeah, no, I was confused because I thought you couldn't build commercial if it wasn't zoned or...
That's true.
Oh, well, yeah, I know that's very true, but it just helps people to know, because some people just think that they, you know, would be able to build it. And then if you say, like, for your own use, then it's amazing how it sort of slips into, oh, well, I'm just going to have, you know, a special club come over and do this. Like, and then it kind of gets, it moves away pretty quickly. This is just kind of a helpful way to go back if there's any compliance issue.
Would this prevent anyone from, for instance, I have a family member who makes golf clubs. Mm-hmm. He has a large shed where those, and he sells them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where he keeps everything, he makes them.
Yeah.
Would that be considered commercial? Because it is his business, but it's not like people are showing up and buying clubs off. He mails them and things like that.
Now that you've described that, that's a good point, because he would have a home occupation. So what we should say, unless they would be for non-commercial use, unless in an approved home-based business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Question, Commissioner McCain. So under your item number 5, Mark, are we there making the distinction between residential uses and commercial uses? So is this the part that we're working on right now only pertain
residential?
18.5003 is just residential.
Just residential, yeah. That's right. So I think that was a really great point Commissioner Olson made, that we want to say non-commercial use unless it's been permitted as a home-based occupation. You think, and so the next bullet is that's totally missing is home offices or home occupations. So we don't even talk about that as being an allowed accessory structure, but we have a home occupation. So it's kind of a disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
So I would recommend we add a line for that to make that consistent.
And it would have to be consistent with the city's home occupation code already. So that would be an additional overlay.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Commissioners, sorry, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Then with the swimming pools, they're kind of folded into number 6. But when I did my research, it seems that we would maybe want to think about pulling swimming pools in its own line, adding hot tubs, we don't have hot tubs, spas, and related equipment, and they would be subject to the fencing requirements, because swimming pools have fencing requirements.
Yeah. I think it's stupid.
I know it.
My whole yard is fenced in. If I go above 2.5 feet, I believe, my pool has to be fenced in. It's ridiculous. Hope we can change that.
So how does that apply to the hot tubs?
That is in the building code. That's in the international building code.
Yeah. Clarify that.
Yeah.
Oh, we just had a question on the hot tubs, because the fencing requirement probably doesn't apply unless the hot tub is below grade. I would assume if the hot tub's 3 feet off the ground, you wouldn't require the fencing requirement, I don't believe.
I think it depends on the depth of the water.
Yeah, I think we would just say, you know, compliant with relevant.
Oh, I guess because the fencing code may or may not apply.
Exactly, may or may not apply.
Depending on the hot tub.
But we want to make sure that that it gets looked at if there is anything that needs to apply. How do you feel about that idea there?
Commissioners, I don't have a real problem.
I think it's probably a good idea just because it does offer the city some protections to where they're not approving something without that wording in there, just and the off chance that it became an issue.
Right. Well, and plus, you know, you get people that are like, well, can I build a hot tub or a spa? And it's like, yeah, you can, you know, just, it's permitted, you know, you've just got to keep it, you know, if there's some requirement, safety requirement, it needs to be met. So in, with tennis courts, we have been having some, so we do have tennis courts in here, but sport courts and recreation and exercise rooms, these are all coming up, and we don't have a lot to help people with. A lot of these bigger homes that are being built on Sawyer, they have sport courts and recreation and exercise rooms. So I think that it would be nice if we had that as a, as an accessory use that's allowable, but that we also have make sure that they're subjected to the lighting and noise regulations, especially like with an with a sport court, outdoor sport court or swimming pool. You know, if someone if someone has built one, then we can make sure that the lighting is not going to bother the neighbors, or you know, because that happens. Mm-hmm. So. That's another one. Anybody have an opinion about that?
Seems reasonable to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And here's one that is probably controversial. Uh-oh. I mean, the next two may be a little controversial. But what do you think about allowing the rental of bedrooms up to four rooms in an existing residential home?
Commissioner McCain, does that, how does that overlay with like an Airbnb? I mean, is that, because we don't, I think there's probably people are going to want an Airbnb provision. How do we overlay those two?
Well, that's a great question.
Is that a border or not?
An it Airbnb could be. Accessory? It could be, though. And, you know, when you've stayed in an Airbnb.
Still just the accessory?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm a little confused because, yeah, the rental of bedrooms with an existing residential unit speaks to non-accessory.
It's a accessory use. So we're saying that you could advertise a room for rent in your house, and that would be an allowed accessory use.
I see. Is it technically not now, or is it just not addressed?
It's just not addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there are people that are, you know, that's becoming more and more of a thing to rent out rooms. And so, you know, if we get a call where someone says, I think, you know, there's a whole bunch of people living there, then we have to go and follow up on it. And, you know, and if we have something to say like, oh, no, you know, you can have somebody that rents your room out or up to four. But other than that, if you're... You know, if you're turning your house into a boarding house, if it's more than four, then that's not okay. I don't know if how important or relevant this was. I just saw it in somebody else's code, and I thought I would bring it up and see what you thought about it.
So I have a house that is a VRBO house. And so this would say you would only allow up to four people at a time.
Right.
Well, there's a lot of times there's like 12, 16 people. So this would say that that's not allowed.
Right.
I don't agree with this one, Commissioner Olson.
Okay.
Because it's a large house. It's my wife's family house, but it's a large house on Lake Sawyer. So they rent it out for vacation rental. And there's always more than four people that rent the house.
So that would make it a boarding. Then we would say, like, oh, no, that's not an allowed accessory use. It would be...
Yeah, so I would agree with that.
Commissioner Olson, I have a question just because I don't know any... But when you live in a house, you have to have... You can't, I think, have five people in a one-bedroom. Is that right?
Well, there are occupancy. That's what I said, subject to occupancy, yeah.
So shouldn't those occupancy laws not transfer over when you have short-term rentals?
They always transfer over.
Okay, so in the event we had 16 people living in a house, we still have other areas which we can...
The occupancy, health and safety, okay. Yes, we do. Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Ecker, do these... renters have to have an exterior entrance or not? I've seen to recall that if you're renting a part of your house to someone else, that they have to have an external door to, for fire reasons.
I don't know the answer to that. My understanding is if you're renting a room inside your house, there needs to be two, you know, it needs to meet the fire code, which your house is going to meet the fire code with the, you know, the two entrance and exits. But you could be delving into something that is another layer that I just don't know the answer to. Yeah. But, you know, it sounds like maybe this rental one is just no good. We should just not even. But I thought it would be worth talking about.
Yeah, that's pretty restrictive. Because even if you have a house and you rent it out to a family that has three kids and it's a four-bedroom house, well, that would technically say that you can't do that because there's five people.
No.
Yeah.
Do we want to say no to that one?
I'll say no.
Yeah, Commissioner. I'll say no.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Commissioner McKay, I think that really places an unfair burden, and it could be conflicting with, you know, regular landlord-tenant stuff. So,
okay.
Yeah, and I need to know more about the VRBO, blah, blah, blah.
So,
very much about.
And then what are your thoughts about whether or not guest houses should be allowed under our accessory in residential? We have them anyway. People build them. We just don't have anything that addresses building a guest house. And then these three bullets under here would say what a guest house is and what it isn't.
Commissioner, but wouldn't a guest, I guess it's a slight different, but wouldn't a guest house fall under the ADU code?
No, because an ADU is meant to be lived in. A guest house would be subordinate. You would have living and sleeping spaces and a bathroom, but no kitchen. So that guest house would never turn into...
Because an ADU is it's a full structure.
Exactly.
With the kitchen and everything.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Commissioner Olson, how's it differ from a cottage?
From a cottage?
Yeah.
I think a cottage is sort of a...
It reminds me of like old-time Sweden or something. Got
yeah,
a cottage.
They use cottages for all kinds of different... I'm not exactly sure. Like, cottages are usually like little structures that are livable spaces. This is basically saying, you know, you could have a accessory structure that would just have extra bedrooms for guests and things. Say you had a small house, you could do that.
The reason I'm asking is because we, not about cottages, but what I'm thinking about is we've just approved the MPD with the availability for inns and stuff like that.
Right.
And that's separate because it's commercial. Is
right.
that correct?
That's okay. correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, these would be for the use of the people that live there.
And they could not rent them
right.
out. Okay.
Commissioner McCain, just last night on TV, I saw that people are building the tiny houses,
yes.
that they're letting homeless, a kind of a way to battle homelessness in the city of Seattle. How or where or should we consider any sort of tiny home structure like that for that kind of a purpose? Would that be, actually they have a small kitchen in them. They're tiny.
Yeah, I think that needs to be kind of in our accessory dwelling discussion, if it's a tiny home. And also in when we get to that next meeting, whether or not there's always the discussion about should an accessory dwelling unit be only for family members, and
is that accessory dwelling? I mean, I think there should be a differentiation from a permanent structure and a temporary structure. What could be deemed a temporary structure?
That's true.
Perhaps,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Because a permanent structure, I would say, indeed. Would fall into a different category, but it was interesting. Just on TV last night, they were discussing this issue.
Tiny homes,
right?
Well, the
temporary.
City of Seattle was giving some sort of grant to pay for like 50% of the tiny home for people's backyards if they were willing to rent to someone who was homeless.
Interesting. And these were units that would be removable, I take it. They were temporary.
Yeah, they're removable. Yeah. Right. Huh. So I don't know if we want to address something like that in the update. It's just another new thing that's on the horizon that might come up.
Yeah. So would an would a tiny home be considered, I still think it would be in the category, a different category as an accessory dwelling unit, though, wouldn't you? That's where it would fit? Well,
since it's
but
temporary.
It's temporary.
Right,
well,
and it's not a guest house because it has a kitchen.
Okay, that goes in the temporary.
It's almost like a trailer. But,
yeah.
You know,
right.
I'll research that and we'll talk about it at the next meeting because I'm thinking that if it's not a permanent structure, then it's a temporary structure. I don't know where it would fit, but...
Well, it kind of almost have to get permanent structure because you have to hook it up to sewer or something. You can't.
Yeah.
It's got a bathroom. It's got a...
Yeah.
It's got to be hooked up permanently to something. You can't just...
You'd hope.
And then you'd have to have a stub out of it. Yeah. You'd have to have a sewer permit. And
yeah.
Incinerating toilets.
They do have those.
They do.
I mean, it is listed in code. Because if you've got an incinerating toilet, you don't have black water.
Right.
It incinerates it, and then you get the ash and dump it. Also, I didn't hear any mention of family situations. I had to deal with a situation where all of a sudden we had 20 people in a four-bedroom house.
Ooh.
Because family, they were only there for 3 days, but the neighbors went freaky all around with all those people, all the cars.
Oh.
And also the situation where they say, okay, we're going to make a temporary sewer hookup to our sewer for RVs for summer.
Yeah.
That's something else that needs to be in code. Sorry for the interruption.
Oh, no. We're... Yeah.
Yeah, because if you want people putting them back there, you want them to at least do it right and have it hooked up right and have good water. And.
Yep. So what do you guys think about adding the guest house as an allowed accessory structure in use in the residential zones, subject to the fact that they're really just supposed to be extra living, sleeping, but there would be no kitchen?
Commissioner McKay, just a side note, perhaps we could do guest houses / other temporary. Maybe we could combine that into that tiny house. But
I think the tiny house should go under the ADU, the accessory dwelling unit, because people are going to live in that.
Yeah.
These are meant not to live in.
In a guest house.
Yeah, because the other section of code we're not on, that's for things people live in.
Right.
Accessory dwelling units.
Right.
These are supposed to be not lived in. These are just, you have guests over, you have two extra rooms and a building outside for extra guests for a couple days. And
right, cool.
You okay. Agree.
Yeah. Okay. Just to clarify, it's an unattached extra bedroom.
That's basically. Yes.
There you go.
Yeah.
Without a kitchen.
Yep. And, so then on number five, we are talking now about the accessory uses and structures in the commercial zones. And if you look at it, it's really funny. It's almost like the code writer got tired because in 1850-040, it just doesn't say much. It says the following uses are allowed in these commercial zones, and it only allows for storage buildings not to exceed the gross floor area of the principal use, in no case greater than 2,000 square feet, and common storage facilities, including outdoor storage of recreational vehicles, limited to serving the residents of a mixed-use development. Now, the idea that in these commercial zones we do allow residential development tells me that we should offer those residences the same accessory uses, or at least some of the same that are allowed in residential zones. Maybe not all of them.
Commissioner, but I don't think you necessarily need to, because in a commercial zone or the town center zone, the only residential uses are multifamily. aren't they? There's no. There are single family?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could have single family. You don't have to have just multifamily. So...
Sure.
Well, we're changing the code. We changed that when we changed the comp plan on.
Oh, okay.
Because we wanted to make it more flexible. Because the way that those designations...
Because there are quite a few single families in commercial zones currently.
Yeah, yeah. And they were just so, you know, so restrictive, and we're trying to create more housing availability and mix the neighborhoods. Like, for example, in Old Town, you know, that's the town's the TC zone.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely a mix of single family.
Oh, yeah, this along 169, yeah, there's quite,
yeah,
a single family.
So... So, I mean, my comment there is that, well, we should at least allow some of the, maybe not all of them, but like some of the accessory uses that you would expect to want if you had, if you were living there. You know, I want to have a garage and, mm-hmm, and that sort of thing. Probably wouldn't be as big of a list as what we just went through.
Well, could we just include something along the lines of, if the primary use is single-family residential,
yeah,
then they get to do all this. Because you just have, I understand if you're the guy who has the house on 169 and you want to do any accessory use, you should be able to do whatever everyone else can, even
right,
though you're in a commercial zone.
Right. That's kind of what I was thinking. That was where I was heading with it, too.
Because anybody who develops in these zones are probably not going to be developing single-family homes, I wouldn't think.
I don't know. You know, in the towns, like I said, in town center, what we're really trying to gain, they're all different, you know, neighborhood, commercial, community commercial, and the town center, they all kind of have different functions and scales. And, you know, in the town center, we're really trying to create what Old Town Black Diamond was at one time, where it, you know, had a hotel and it had, you know, that eclectic sort of mix. So that's one zone, and we could clarify and break it down. I could bring back zone by zone, like in this TC zone, you can do this in the,
I think if, because they're all going to be small parcels, I think if you just somehow included it, it's a single family as the primary use,
mm-hmm,
then you should be able to do what everyone else can in a single family, even if you're in that zone.
Okay. That's simple. So then the storage building in A, that seems pretty restrictive. I don't know, 2,000 square feet for a storage building in a commercial zone seems awfully small to me. And
Commissioner, but it does, but it only to the extent that you could... In a commercial zone, there's no real restriction on your primary structure.
True.
So if you want to do a 50,000 square foot storage unit, you can just do that.
Do it, just do it.
This
attached.
Is just an accessory use. I mean, you can do 10 of them if you want. There's no restriction on how many primary dwellings you can do,
yeah,
or primary structures. You know, in a single family, mm-hmm, you only allow one house.
Right.
But you could do 10 storage buildings if you want. In a commercial zone, there's no, none of them have to be accessory.
Yeah.
I don't understand why this is here either.
I don't. It just doesn't make sense to me. Storage buildings not to exceed the gross floor, okay? So you're saying your storage building can't be bigger than your principal commercial building, yeah. And it feels like that's where it should end to be, without the no greater than 2,000 square feet. But
because this seems to limit rather than you're more limited with this rather with than residential, like you were saying, right? Is that
Commissioner, but the one it's really the whole section doesn't really matter, I don't think, because you would never, I don't think you would ever go through an accessory use permit in the commercial zone.
You're right.
Because you would have,
yeah,
to go...
Through the site plan approval.
Yeah, you would have to go through the normal approval process to build a, even a 100 square foot storage,
yeah,
unit. You would need... It's not a different review. it would be the same review.
Honestly, what we ought to do with that is say is add, get rid of that A and B and add language that it's going to be subject to the
design standards of
the design standards and site plan approval.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Zoning limitations.
Yeah. Nice work, you guys. Okay. So then 050, same thing, industrial zone, accessory uses and structures. I think we should treat it the same way. Get rid of, I mean, the accessory, A, accessory living quarters in an industrial zone. I mean, it's fine if we're saying it's for caretaker and we limit it, but it doesn't say that here.
Yeah, Commissioner McCain, I would think the only approved use would be a caretaker or security trailer.
Yeah.
Or such,
yeah.
But that's so case by case.
Commissioner Bell, is there any approved, like in business park industrial zones or industrial zones, is there any approved living quarters at all? Is there any form of residential allowed?
No. Nope, and that's why this accessory living quarters is here, I imagine, to give some flexibility.
Yeah. No, which, I guess, yeah. I understand it. Cause some, yeah. You know, you might have a huge warehouse, and they might have a spot for the night watchman, or a lot of the big storage facilities you see have a person that lives in the,
right.
by the gate there, and they have a small house. And the,
I just think it would be helpful if we actually said for a caretaker, a security person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And then add in that language that that it's going to be subject to the design standards and site plan.
So, Ms. Kincaid, if you could be more specific about your suggested change, I'm a little bit lost in the. So, what would your suggested change look like there?
On 050, I would say accessory living quarters for caretaker or security personnel. And then I would get rid of B. And I would just say other uses subject to the design standards and site plan approval.
Commissioners?
Yeah.
Commissioner Olson?
The word caretaker, yeah, I have that look often, though.
Caretaker's not good?
It just reminds me of, you know, like hospital care.
Oh. Security guard.
So, what he was saying, the one that stands out is like storage units where they do have somebody that lives on site, and that's part of their benefit is that they're on site and manage it, but they live there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not really a caretaker. I guess they're an employee, and that's part of their benefit structure. So I don't.
Technically, they're security personnel. They're living there.
So
we could just say security personnel.
I can't think of a word on the moment, but
yeah.
I'll keep thinking, I'm sure, and if we can find a better word or whatnot. I mean, it's easily changeable, right?
So. Right, and so what I'll do based on what we've just done here is I'm going to mark up the copy of the code and bring it back so you'll actually get to read it, like, and then make more changes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Commissioner Eckert, maybe what you can do is say it's a site caretaker to distinguish it from medical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may be mowing the lawn or trimming the bushes.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Site caretaker.
Site?
Site.
S-I-T-E.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. That works. Good
that
idea.
That was a really, really great discussion, and that's we made it through this chapter. And
did we do fences and walls?
Well, I didn't.
18.
Yeah, I didn't.
Is that a joke?
Really? I didn't really see that we needed to make any changes in this section. I wasn't proposing any changes here, but
I see.
But certainly if any of the commissioners have read it and thought that it needs some amendment, then we should talk about it.
Commissioner McCain, Ms. Kincaid, do you happen to know what the county acceptable building height is? I'm surprised it's 6 feet. I thought it was 5 feet. So it's 72 inches in height. So a fence can be that high?
I thought the county had it at 5 feet instead of 6 feet.
I don't know the answer to that. I can look it up, though.
It might be interesting to know what other areas height restrictions are in a fence. Imagine in a lot with the square footage, like 6,000 square feet, a six-foot fence would look pretty ominous.
That's true, it would, wouldn't it?
And I would be interested to see what the design standard is for fencing in the MPD. If we're looking for consistency, maybe throughout the whole city, okay, that might be useful.
Okay. Well, then that I can bring that back for our next meeting.
Commissioners, anybody else have a question on any fencing things? Maybe some additional information Ms. Kincaid can bring back to us?
Unless we want to talk about pools.
Pool fencing. Yeah. How big is your pool?
It's 2.5 feet because they didn't build a fence.
No.
So we just got one of those, you know, those above pop-up ones, right?
Yeah. Commissioner, or Ms. Kincaid, I have a question, and I like the subject we're going on, but for the fencing standard, where it talks about the use of barbed wire, razor wire, that is still allowed. It says, other than in public industrial or business industrial park zones. Okay, yeah. So the industrial parks are going to be okay with razor wire.
Yeah.
Okay, but and so might that be something that we'll see perhaps in the north quadrant of the comp plan where we have the industrial space, the light industrial?
Well, you could, yeah, but I was just thinking we should maybe clarify that the razor wire should only be used in heavy industrial areas, not the light industrial business park.
See, I think I have a problem with B.
With B?
Maybe mm-hmm. the other commissioners could weigh in on that, too. I think razor wire and things are a tough spot in the city.
Yeah, so, Commissioner Butt, so one thing I could see might become a problem is, like, I know there's a storage facility going in on the highway there. Well, that's in a commercial zone, but almost always they have a barbed wire fence mm-hmm. surrounding it.
They do.
Technically, they wouldn't be allowed to do that because
no.
they're not in the correct zone.
That's right.
But almost every storage facility you go around has mm-hmm. barbed wire on
right.
top.
Commissioner McCain, I think the problem with the city of Maple Valley is that they have that storage center right on their gateway overlay.
With the barbed wire.
That's a big problem.
Yeah.
It's a big problem with their new design standards. So I know that we would probably be the last one to the party with the plan that's already going in. But I think maybe for future use, I would see that there could be another way to provide good security without using barbed wire, razor wire, and that in the city of Black Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
I
appreciate the gateway overlay district or something,
yeah.
especially.
Yeah, because and that storage facility is going to be right there. I don't
yeah.
know if that permit's already been issued and if we have any time to weigh in on
it,
that.
It hasn't been issued.
Yeah, I think that has posed a problem for the city of Maple Valley. It might be something to consider.
Well, let me look into that and think about how we might want to revise this so that we don't end up, you know, with putting something down on the ground that is really contrary to what we're trying to accomplish, like with the gateway.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I know the city of Maple Valley, after that, is now not allowed any storage facilities on the highway.
No more storage facilities on the highway.
Yeah. In their commercial zones, but they're not yeah. allowed on the with any frontage on the highway mm-hmm. anymore.
Okay.
I think it's probably because of that. Mm-hmm.
And Commissioner Kane, I don't know that we'd have to go that far, but I think that you can accomplish fencing that is more visually compatible
mm-hmm.
in the overlay area. You know, a decorative
yeah.
wood fence or something. But I'm not a fan either of storage facilities in our gateway overlay
area. Well, overlay has a 30-foot setback, I want to say, that requires trees and certain things. You couldn't have anything within at least 30 feet, I believe.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Maybe
Commissioner Wilson, I just...
Oh, I'm sorry. Ms. Kincaid, maybe you could bring with you to the next meeting some of the gateway overlay so we could check that out in a good comparison with this fence issue. And
I will do that, and we'll take a closer look. I'll bring the gateway overlay and fencing in the MPD design standards, the height, you know, of the fencing.
For sure. One thing, again, the way it is now, technically, there wouldn't be allowed anyways. There is, as far as I know, there's no industrial, business industrial on the highway.
No, there isn't.
In
that's
the city.
Right.
So that storage facility is commercial. They wouldn't be allowed to do it per the code currently.
Well, Commissioner Olson, but with that road that is coming through the light industrial that we are planning, that's where it would come into play.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so I don't know what the design, I think that's going to be a semi-major road, mm-hmm. or not 169 major, but.
Oh, the pipeline.
The pipeline, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's actually a north-south road there. But good discussion.
Yeah.
I think we could spend a little bit more time.
I think
time
we could work a little more time on this fencing. Yeah.
Right.
Yep. So next time I'll bring, bring some markup copy of the work we've done, have some more discussion on the fencing and walls, and if time allows, get started on the accessory dwelling unit section. Geez, this is more fun than comp plan policies, isn't it?
Yes. Well, thank you, Ms. Kincaid. Does that conclude your new business?
Yes, it does.
All right. Mr. Davis.
Making sure it's working properly.
I was going to say, at this point in time, we would welcome any public comments or questions. If you would like to approach the podium, please do so. State your name and city for the record. Seeing no one that would like to take advantage of that, for the good of the order, Ms. Kincaid.
I just wanted to give you a status on the comp plan. Since it left your hands, we've had started some planning committee meetings before it goes to council. The planning committee is made up of two council members. We've also had actually a pretty favorable review from Puget Sound Regional Council. So that was the thing that we were really concerned about, the PSRC and how they would view, you know, they're the ones that have to certify the plan. And there were very few changes that they asked us to make, so that was very encouraging.
So is there a tentative timeline for approval?
Well, I think we probably won't try to get before the council until the first of the year because they have got so much with budget from here on to the end of the year. Our goal with the Puget Sound Regional is to get it, if it's all adopted before March, the city will be eligible for transportation funding for the next year.
Good. That's good news. All right. Well, I want to thank all the commissioners for a very productive meeting, and especially our new commissioners, Mr. Jansen, Mr. Butt. Great that you participated. I'm looking forward to next month's meeting. And with all that said, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'd like to make a motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Commissioner Olser. Is there a second?
Second.
Oh. Good, Mr. Jensen, I appreciate that second. So it's been moved and seconded that we adjourn this meeting of the November 6th Black Diamond Hunting Commission. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.